Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into the real engine room of our digital lives. We're talking about the infrastructure, you know, from home labs all the way up to massive data centers.
That's right. We've been looking at a whole bunch of new developments.
Yeah, things that are making everything faster, smarter, and genuinely future ready.
And our mission today, really, is to track how things are evolving together. Storage, networking, software, they're all moving fast.
And you see these common themes, right? Speed is obviously huge. PCI 5.0, even 6.0 now, Thunderbolt 5.
Exactly. And security, that's the other big one. Things like PQC isolation techniques, it's becoming standard.
So we've got stuff from the big players, Trunes, Aceducer, Synology, QNAP, plus some really interesting independent research, like the latest from Backblaze on hard drives.
Right, and even some new DIY hardware that's pushing boundaries.
We're basically going to unpack what all these shifts really mean for performance, and maybe more importantly for peace of mind, you know, for you using this stuff day to day.
Okay, so where do we start? Storage seems like the bedrock.
Let's do it. Section one, the new reality of data storage speed, density, and lifespan.
Okay, so hard drives. We all kind of know the old story, right? The bathtub curve for failures.
Yeah, fails early, levels off, then fails late. That's the classic theory.
Well, the latest data, especially from places like Backblaze that run huge numbers of drives, is kind of challenging that.
Ah, so the real world data isn't matching the old curve anymore.
Not really, especially with modern enterprise drives. We're not talking about those like 2013 consumer models that maybe define the original curve.
Okay.
What Backblaze is seeing now, looking at data spanning up to 11 years on these newer drives, is that the failure rate doesn't really spike much early on.
Huh. So what does it do?
It increases almost linearly over time, just a steady gradual climb in failure probability.
Linearly?
Yeah.
Wow. So less early panic, but a more predictable wear out. What's the implication then?
Well, the big one is lifecycle planning. It suggests we should probably be thinking about a service life closer to, say, 7 years now for these drives.
7 years. That's quite a shift from maybe, what, 3 or 5 years people used to plan for.
Exactly. It's a big deal for efficiency, TCO, total cost of ownership. It seems manufacturing tolerances are just better, and people are using more reliable enterprise drives, even in large cloud setups.
Makes sense. And speaking of tolerances and pushing limits, Toshiba, they just verified stacking 12 disks in a standard 3.5-inch drive.
Yeah, that's industry-first territory. 12 platters. The goal, when they mix this with MAMR or AMMR tech, is hitting that 40-terabyte mark, maybe by 2027.
40 terabytes? But how do you even fit 12 platters in there? Isn't it already packed with 9 or 10?
Ah, that's the clever bit. They're moving away from the traditional aluminum platters, the substrate itself.
Okay, to what?
Glass. Glass substrates. They're thinner, inherently more rigid, and handle vibration better than aluminum, especially as things get denser.
Glass. Huh. So it's thinner and stronger. Allows them to squeeze in those extra platters without things getting, well, wobbly.
Precisely. It's a neat piece of material science solving a physical density problem. Really impressive engineering.
Okay, so that's density and longevity. What about just raw speed? Moving over to SSDs, the PCIe Gen 5 race is definitely heating up.
Oh, yeah. You see things like Teen Group NV10000 M22 drive hitting, 10,000 megabytes per second read makes Gen 4 look almost slow.
10,000. That's fine. But you mentioned something interesting when we prep. It's not just the speed, it's the cooling that tells a story.
Exactly. That drive uses a special graphene heat spreader. The fact that a high-end consumer drive needs this kind of like custom high-efficiency cooling solution built in.
Yeah.
It tells you we're completely past the point where top performance storage can just be passively cooled. Even for enthusiasts, hitting these speeds is now an active thermal management problem. You got to deal with the heat.
Right. That's a good point. So if that's consumer speed needing fancy cooling, what's happening on the enterprise side for reliability?
Well, there you're looking at drives like QNAP's SST700D. It uses that EDSFF E1S interface, still PCIe Gen 4. But the focus is endurance.
EDSFF, that's the newer form factor, right? And endurance means.
Yeah, the ruler shape. Yeah. And endurance, it's rated at 1 DWPD drive write per day, meaning you can literally rewrite the entire drive capacity every single day for its whole warranty period. Plus, it has the essentials like power loss protection, PLP, and hardware encryption, SED, stuff you absolutely need for serious workloads.
Got it. But, you know, the hardware is only part of the equation. We saw something from KOXIA about software optimization that sounded pretty huge.
Ah, yes. This is really interesting, especially if you're running things with lots of writes, like databases for AI or big cloud stuff.
Yeah.
Chaox AE is developing an open source plugin for RocksDB.
RocksDB, okay. And it's for optimizing RAID setups with multiple SSDs.
Exactly. And the main target is something called the Wafrite amplification factor.
Wafrite, okay, refresh my memory. That's like the hidden extra work the SSD controller does.
Precisely. It's the ratio of data the controller actually writes internally compared to the data you told it to write. A lot of that internal writing is just moving data around, garbage collection, basically wasted effort.
And high WAF wears out the drive faster and slows it down.
Right. So this Chaox AE plugin, they're claiming it can cut WAF by up to 46%. 46%. And boost throughput by over 8 times compared to just standard Linux software RAID mirroring.
Whoa, nearly half the write amplification gone. That's massive. It doesn't just speed things up. It makes the SSDs last way longer because you're not burning through write cycles unnecessarily.
It's a huge potential improvement for efficiency and longevity. They're targeting Q1 2026 for the release, so something to keep an eye on.
Definitely. Okay, let's shift gears from storage itself to how we connect it all.
Right, because the storage is fast, but the pipes matter just as much. And the very foundation, the silicon routing the data, is getting a serious upgrade too. Microchip announced the first 3-nanometer PCIe 6.0 switch chip.
3 nanometers, PCIe 6.0, wow. Part of their SwitchTech Gen 6 series, right? How many lanes are we talking?
Up to 160 PCIe lanes on a single chip. Insane bandwidth, super flexible configurations. This is really foundational stuff for the next wave of AI and high-performance computing.
Yeah, you need that kind of bandwidth for massive GPU clusters. But you highlighted another feature that's maybe even more important long-term.
Yes, integrated post-quantum secure encryption, PQC.
Built right into the switch chip.
Built right in. They're embedding future-proof security into the fundamental data center fabric now. That's significant.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the core infrastructure. How does that kind of speed translate down to, say, a workstation user? QNAP had something with Thunderbolt 5.
Yeah, the QXP T52P expansion card.
Yeah.
Thunderbolt 5 is a big jump. It gives you up to 80 gigabits per second bidirectional bandwidth. Double the previous gen.
80 gigabits bidirectional. How does that change things practically?
Well, imagine a video editing team. You could have one big NAS, like their TVS AIA 1688 ATX, serving multiple high-res editing suites directly over Thunderbolt 5. Each gets massive bandwidth without interfering with the others.
Ah, so parallel high-speed access. And presumably others could still access the same NAS over, like, standard 10 gig Ethernet.
Exactly. It allows for these mixed high-performance workflows without bottlenecks. Really powerful for creative studios.
Speaking of studios, maybe smaller ones or pros who need speed but also quiet, we saw a neat 10GBE switch from QNAP too, right? The QSW 3000 series?
Yes, the QSW L3205-1C4T model.
Mm-hmm.
This one seems to hit a really nice spot for prosumers or small creative teams. You get 5 full 10GB ports.
5. Okay, so enough for a NAS and a few workstations. Mix of copper and SFP plus FAW.
4 multi-gig RJ45, and one is a combo SFP plus RJ45 port. Flexible. Plus, it supports LECP link aggregation, so you could potentially get up to 20 GBPs to a capable device.
Nice. But the killer feature for that environment.
It's fanless.
Yeah.
Completely silent.
That's huge. You absolutely cannot have a noisy switch humming away in an editing bay or recording space. Silence is golden there.
Totally non-negotiable. Okay, so shifting from wired speed to wireless and network intelligence. UniFi Network 9.5 brought some interesting smarts.
Yeah, the channel AI thing sounded kind of cool, like an automated DJ for your Wi-Fi channels.
Huh. That's actually a great way to put it. You know how much of a pain co-channel interference can be in big Wi-Fi deployments?
Oh, yeah. Nightmare to troubleshoot manually.
So channel AI scans the environment, and with basically one click, it figures out the optimal channel plan for all your access points to minimize that interference.
One-click optimization across a whole site. That saves hours, days.
Easily. Takes the manual guesswork and, frankly, agony out of tuning potentially dozens of APs. It just uses an algorithm to sort it out.
That's genuinely useful. And they had something for the wired side, too. Something predictive. Port anomaly.
Yeah, this is about preventing problems before they take down the network. Port anomaly watches for signs of, like, physical layer instability. I mean, ports slapping up and down rapidly, or maybe a network loop forming.
Stuff that indicates a bad cable, failing device, or configuration error.
Exactly. Instead of waiting for users to complain or the whole network backbone to become unstable, it flags these potential issues early in their alarm manager. Admins can then go fix the physical problem proactively.
Predictive maintenance for the network infrastructure. Smart. Okay, let's pivot to probably the most critical area, software, security, and management. Right, the big security elephant in the room, quantum computing. It feels futuristic, but we're seeing vendors act now. Akister ADM 5.1 is labeled PQC ready.
Yeah, this is a really important milestone, especially seeing it on consumer and small business NAS devices already. It's proactive defense.
So what does PQC ready mean in practice? What are they doing?
They've implemented what's called a hybrid TLS encryption setup. It uses the Kyber algorithm, which is one of the ones NIST has certified for post-quantum cryptography.
Kyber. Okay. And the hybrid part means it uses both current and quantum-resistant methods.
Kind of. But the key reason this matters today is to defend against harvest now, decrypt later attacks.
Right, where attackers steal encrypted data now, thinking they'll just crack it easily once powerful quantum computers arrive.
Exactly. By using PQC now, Acester is essentially making that stolen data useless even to future quantum computers. It protects the long-term confidentiality of your data.
And is it complicated for the user?
That's the beauty. For most users with up-to-date browsers that support these standards, it should be automatic. No complex configuration needed to get that future-proofed connection security.
That's fantastic. Real peace of mind baked in. Okay, sticking with security, but shifting to backups. Synology Active Protect Manager 1.1 had some interesting hardening features.
They did. They focused on locking down the backup appliance itself during and after operations. There's a new permitted access mode.
Permitted access mode sounds restrictive. How does it work?
So while a backup job is actually running, only specific whitelisted IP addresses can even connect to the Active Protect system. Keeps things locked down during the transfer.
Okay, that makes sense. But what's the really clever part?
The moment that backup job finishes, or if it gets terminated for some reason, the system automatically flips into full isolation mode. Bam, door slams shut.
Full isolation, meaning even the whitelisted IPs get cut off.
Seems like it, or at least access becomes extremely restricted. The point is to drastically minimize the time window where anything, like ransomware, could potentially access or tamper with those crucial backup files after the job is done.
That's smart. Closing the window of vulnerability. Meanwhile, QNAP is taking a different approach to demonstrating security. They're putting their devices up for public hacking.
Yep, they're participating in Pintoan, Ireland again in 2025, specifically submitting their TS-453E NAS and the Cura 322 router for the security researchers to attack.
Wow, that takes guts. But it's a strong statement, isn't it? It shows they're serious about finding and fixing vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. It's about continuous validation, not just internal testing. And staying on QNAP, they're also tackling resilience, but for virtual machines this time. Virtualization Station 4 has a VM high availability beta.
VM high availability. So automatic failover if one NAS dies, how are they pulling that off between two separate boxes?
They're leveraging their Core TS Hero operating system, which uses ZFS. ZFS has features like SnapSync, which can do real-time block-level replication between two NAS devices.
So the second NAS has an exact up-to-the-second copy of the VM's data.
Pretty much. So if the primary NAS fails, the secondary NAS can automatically take over running that critical virtual machine with minimal interruption. It provides that seamless failover for essential services hosted in VMs.
Very cool. Okay, let's talk TrueNAS. They've had some key updates focused on efficiency and better management, right? Starting with 25.0 Goldeye.
Yes, Goldeye brought something people have been asking for ages, ZFS rewrite.
ZFS rewrite. I remember the buzz. This is about rebalancing data across EVs.
Exactly. Before this, if you added new drives or new groups of drives, VDEVs, to your ZFS pool, the new data would go to the new drives, but the old data would stay put on the original ones.
Right, leading to uneven usage and maybe performance hotspots, and fixing it usually meant complex manual scripting.
Yeah, it was a pain. ZFS Rewrite finally gives you a built-in way to tell TrueNAS, hey, redistribute the data evenly across all the VDEVs in the pool. Much simpler, optimizes performance, evens out drive wear. It's a big quality of life improvement.
Definitely sounds like it. And looking ahead, TrueNAS 26.04 Half Moon has something called TrueSearch.
Yeah, this sounds really promising, especially for people managing massive archives. It's native macOS Spotlight integration for TrueNAS shares.
Spotlight on the NAS, so instant searching, even across potentially billions of files.
That's the goal. Imagine being able to use the familiar fast Spotlight search on your Mac to instantly find files within a massive NAS archive without waiting for slow indexing. That could be huge for productivity.
No kidding. Okay, one last area. We've talked enterprise, prosumer. What about the DIY scene and local AI? Things are getting powerful there too. The Orange Pi 6 Plus.
Oh yeah, that board is a beast for its size. It's running a 12-core ARM chip. The CD8180 can take up to 64 gigs of LPDDR5 RAM.
64
Yeah,
gigs.
and crucially, it has a dedicated NPU neural processing unit rated at 30 TOPs, 30 trillion operations per second for AI tasks.
30 TOPs plus dual 5GBE ports. What do you even do with that much power in a small board?
Well, it's perfect for developers or enthusiasts building local AI applications, running inference models, maybe a powerful home media server with AI features, or even a high-speed custom router or firewall. It's incredibly versatile.
It really puts serious local compute power in reach, and even budget NAS boxes are getting smarter, right? That Zetlab AI NAS D4.
Exactly. It uses the Rockchip RK3588, which has a respectable 6 TOPs NPU. Not 30, but still significant for a personal NAS.
And what kind of AI features does that enable on your own personal data?
Things like AI-powered photo classification, semantic search, searching by meaning, not just keywords, maybe even AI Q&A where you can ask questions about your documents, and it all runs locally on the device.
So the intelligence stays local, your data stays private. That's a compelling trend, moving AI away from relying solely on the cloud.
It puts the control back in the user's hands, which is a big theme we're seeing. Hashtag #HatJago.
Wow. Okay. We've covered a ton of ground. From hard drives using glass to hit crazy densities, network speeds doubling again with Thunderbolt 5.
And maybe most critically, seeing things like post-quantum cryptography already landing in software like ADM 5.1, that proactive security is key.
Yeah. What's the biggest sort of connecting thread you see across all this?
For me, it's this convergence of just raw performance bumps like PCIe 6.0, faster connections with sophisticated intelligence layered on top.
Intelligence, like the channel AI optimizing Wi-Fi or that KIOXIA plugin managing SSD writes.
Exactly. Efficiency is becoming the new benchmark for reliability. Reducing that hidden overhead, like WAF, isn't just faster, it makes things last longer. Optimizing Wi-Fi channels automatically isn't just convenient, it makes the whole network more stable. The systems are getting smarter at managing themselves.
That makes a lot of sense. So maybe a final thought to leave people with. If the big NAS vendors are already worried about harvest now, decrypt later, and are shipping PQC today,
Right.
how should you, the listener, be thinking about the long-term security of your own confidential data, especially stuff you might have stored away on older systems that don't have these newer quantum-resistant protections? What's your plan for securing those archives against future threats?
That's a really crucial question to ponder. And maybe on a slightly different note, for those managing multiple systems, keep an eye on things like the TrueNAS Connect beta.
Ah, yeah. What's the idea there?
It's about building tools so your different TrueNAS systems can kind of talk to each other, giving you centralized visibility and management without having to, give up direct control over each box. Another example of smarter management evolving.
Interesting stuff. Lots to think about, lots happening. Fantastic insights today.
Always a pleasure to dive into this stuff.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.